Welcome to Profiles. I'm Moya Andrews, and today our guest is Greg Spikett, who is the new director of the Hilltop Garden and Nature Center, which is such an important part of our Bloomington community. Welcome, Greg.
Thanks, Moya. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Hilltop has a long tradition in this community, and all of us who see it as a local treasure are very happy to have you here as the new director. But tell us, why did you decide to take this position? You were doing so many interesting things in the big city of Chicago.
I wanted to take a job that dealt with a public garden and education at the same time. And this one actually had both and involved children, too. And children and gardening is a big passion of mine.
Well, what exactly is your role and what does your position entail?
Yeah, my role is director of Hilltop Gardens, which sounds nice and lofty, like, ooh, I have a little white office that I sit on and minions go out to do my bidding. But it really means I do everything from open the gate, mow the grass, make sure that volunteers get their stuff done, plant the tomato seeds, and educate the children. So I do a little bit of everything.
Well, it sounds as though every day is different. And what about Hilltop's history and mission specifically attracted you to come to this part of the country?
Well, part of it was that it's part of Bloomington and part of the IU community, and that's what I really wanted to do, is be part of a college community for more education and research. But the other part of its mission and its history is that it was for children, that it was a gardening program for children to basically mentor children and change their lives for a lifelong passion.
So can you describe for our listeners the many different types of programs that are offered in addition to the children's program?
Well, there in the past, a lot of the programs where they had children's programming, they have the community garden program, they have some classes that are taught through HYPER or CORE, which is the outdoor adventure training, you know, so if you want to learn how to kayak or rock climb or all that kind of stuff. And then they have basically little programs through the through Bloomington Parks and Rec. They teach the organic class there. They have taught other programs there. We teach classes at there on seed starting, heirloom tomatoes, how to make HYPER tufa, which is those expensive concrete English trough containers that you can do, wreath making classes they've taught there. So there's a lot of hands-on workshoppy things, and that seems to be our direction, is that hands-on workshoppy. Not a lot of theory, but the actual doing of something is what we do.
Do you think that the current climate of interest in the environment and sustainability in particular makes Hilltop's part in the community especially relevant today?
I think Hilltop's time has finally come. With sustainability moving to the forefront, gardening and the history of organic gardening started by Leah Garlot and that whole program of sustainability, which organic gardening's part of that, but sustainability is even a broader thing of local foods, of energy, of the whole, every part of gardening and our lives, how that all works together. I think Hilltop is perfectly poised at IU for that because of our 5 acres and because we are kind of a nature center.
Well, you mentioned that there are 5 acres. What exactly is there at Hilltop? What's the physical plant like?
Well, the physical part is we have a shed to store our tools in, and then we have the old youth garden building, which was built by biology for Barbara Shaluka way back when, which essentially needs to be redone because it is a shed that was turned into a classroom. And then we have the new building that was built starting with the bequest of Barbara Shaluka, her money, her entire, inheritance was left to Hilltop. And that started our building fund. So we were given they built a 900-square-foot greenhouse. They built a head house and then a small office, entry, classroom facility that connects to that. So that's what we have right now. And then we have display gardens and the actual garden itself that we do the children's garden in.
Are there any other programs that in the United States that have children's gardens?
There are. Children's gardening in America has changed dramatically since Barbara Shaluka started it. In Brooklyn and in Chicago, they still have gardening as a component for the children. But most children's gardens now throughout the country are essentially playgrounds with plants. And there's no actual gardening that the children's do, which is unfortunate because children's museums are more interactive than children's gardens these days. And that's kind of unfortunate. They're more of playgrounds than gardens.
So what we have here is unique. It's something that we need to preserve and build on.
It's very unique. It needs to be treated like museums are moving towards, like Wonder Lab, very hands-on, very educational, very informative. We need to keep that component here at Hilltop so that we can continue nurturing the next generation of gardeners and people that will grow up to understand that connection we have with the earth and our responsibility to the planet at large that we live in.
So in a sense, Hilltop is like an outdoor museum.
It is exactly.
An interactive museum.
Correct. It is exactly like an outdoor interactive museum. And children can learn a lot about that and learn that sometimes plants die and it has nothing to do with you. You know, sometimes we start a plant and it dies. A lot of adults are like that. Oh, I tried this and it died. Well, if you have no skill and you haven't been nurtured in that, you don't realize that sometimes things just die. And, you know, plants aren't like pets.
But there's a lesson there, isn't there? The eternal cycle of birth and maturity
life.
and death.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that there must be a lot of lessons like that that children can learn in your kind of environment.
There is. There's the whole lesson of the whole life and death cycle, the whole fruiting and, you know, starting from seeds and how everything comes into being and finally goes back to where it comes from. The whole composting issue, how the whole ecosystem concept of how important every little piece, how insects are vital and how caterpillars have to come before you have butterflies. And so you end up with a few holes in your plants and how worms are, although they're slimy and gooey, that they actually turn the earth and change, you know, big chunks of plants into small little bits that are now digested and used for new plants. So, yeah, Hilltop has a really strong place in the now with video games, a very important place in children's lives.
Yes, it's one of the few places where they really can get in touch with the real world and with the real earth.
Correct.
And I'm sure when I listen to people who were Hilltoppers when they were children and they're now grown up and you meet them as dedicated gardeners and they're all very quick to say, I was a Hilltopper. And it seems to have affected that generation that have come through Hilltop since it opened in 1948 profoundly.
Yes, it has. I think gardening has that change in people because it is so broad that people can do whatever they want with it. But gardening really has that almost nurturing connection that anyone can do and create.
And I would imagine, too, for children to see the importance of nurturing in relation to plants, it would make them understand how important it is for people to relate in a kind way with a generous spirit to other human beings as well as to all kinds of organisms.
There is a life lesson that you learn when you learn to garden about being a caretaker and your place in the world of being you're responsible for your little piece, and that little piece is part of a greater whole. And I think that's an important lesson children learn.
Yes, and many others, I suppose, too. Delayed gratification might be another one. What groups support Hilltop, Greg?
We are really fortunate to have the Bloomington Garden Club support us, the Hilltop Education Foundation, and then just lots, like you said, Hilltoppers, lots of interested people in the community. We've been very fortunate by passionate people that have been through the program or they have met people or are just gardeners that see the resource that we have at Hilltop. And it's through that and their donations that really allow us to operate. The university is very supportive that they've given us the property and stuff. But because we're not academically connected truly to the university, we don't get the funding like you would as if you were a department at the university.
So you're very reliant on donations and on volunteers. Tell me a little bit about how you come to be a volunteer or how you can volunteer.
It's amazing. I volunteered a lot of other places, and we're so new at getting volunteers and having them. We have a tradition of volunteers at Hilltop, but not the quantity that we really need to make Hilltop work. And I come from ones that have very formal programs like Chicago Botanic Garden, where you go through training and you sit in a little classroom, to where we pretty much have you sign up And then when you get there that day to work, we pretty much have you on a calendar so we know when you arrive. And then once you arrive, we have that day's work involved. And we try to understand what each volunteer can do. And then that way we can kind of save those jobs off to the side and say, okay, well, this person likes to work on tools. This person likes to water and clean plants. This person likes to do clerical work. And we try to do that. And
try to match people.
We try to match people to what they like to do for what we need.
And can you give some examples of some groups or some people who have volunteered recently at Hilltop and made a difference?
Well, we have Charlotte Griffin has been fantastic at just being that person that was there as a transition. When I got here, she was essentially the only volunteer that I knew of. But she came pretty much 3 days a week and weeded and helped me do whatever I needed to do. And then Judy Granboy has been invaluable. Has just been really great at marketing and writing articles and trying to do the outreach part of the garden. We've had other ones come in and go, you know, past that. My wife has been very good. She comes in every day and helps with the clerical and just makes sure that I have staff there that answers the phone and makes sure my emails are answered.
Did she know that was in her job description when she married you?
Yeah, hopefully no, because that's why she married me. But now it's kind of comes with the package. But she's great at that. And I really appreciate all that.
Now, I believe that she's the official photographer and that you are keeping a photographic record of Hilltop in the various seasons.
Correct. We are. We are starting to photograph all of our changes, and we've had to start doing it almost – we started doing it every month, and we realized that we need to do it almost every week because things change so quickly at Hilltop now. There was so much to do when I got here, and there's so much potential. So the change has been quite dramatic.
Now, when did you actually start?
I actually started August 13th.
2007,
yeah.
Well, it's been a busy few months.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Judy Granboys, and I believe she's the president of the Hilltop Educational Foundation. Now, what exactly is the foundation as contrasted with the Nature and Garden Center?
The Garden Center is essentially me and the university, so that's that. And HEF, the Hilltop Education Foundation, was to raise funds and awareness about the garden. So they're like the United Way of the garden. So they're the ones that solicit money and help us with programs and are invaluable at trying to help us get the garden moving forward.
Well, it's good to have that group of dedicated people, and I can see how important it is. And you've also had other groups that have volunteered, groups, service groups, churches. Can you tell us a couple of examples of groups that are, and what they've done?
Well, we have one of our best groups is the road crew from Monroe County. That's been fantastic. We get, students and community people that live in the Bloomington community that have maybe made poor choices in the community and have gotten assigned to us as what we can call conscripted volunteers. They're forced volunteerism, and they've been fantastic at helping us move the garden forward. We've had a couple of large churches help us to just come and work, individual service fraternities that come out for one day for a few hours. It's amazing what you can do if you're organized with 15 people for an hour, you know, to try to get a lot of stuff done. It's actually more difficult to get stuff done every week with a volunteer that shows up for 4 hours a week if too many of those show up. You know, if all of a sudden I have 9 4-hour volunteers show up, I may not have enough to do for that, but I might have enough to do if I had them show up all week. You know, so if you plan ahead, you can get quite a bit done. So those are the kinds of things that have been absolutely invaluable.
Well, how have you developed your own particular vision and plan for the future of Hilltop? I know that Barbara Shaluka, who we mentioned earlier, who was a professor of biology, came here right after her PhD and her internship at the Brooklyn Botanical Garden and started Hilltop. But a lot of things have changed since then. And can you tell me what your vision is so that we have a future view of where Hilltop is going?
Yeah. Barbara's vision was fantastic, and I want to preserve that vision because coming from the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, which has a long history of children's education and gardening, she came, post-war when there weren't any activities for children to deal with, into a nurturing environment from a very urban environment that was pretty run down in New York, to training children, to moving to an environment that was mostly rural, and then, you know, and essentially family units that were intact, mothers that didn't work, you know, so she had all of this to deal with. So now we have a changing atmosphere where children's, the both parents are working, children essentially need a daycare setting. So how are we thinking about working with that? So my vision has been for Hilltop to become less of an education like Barbara was, because Barbara was an educator, and that was her summer program, was education for children. And now we need to look year-round. She was busy in the winter. When school started, she was done. So we need to be open year-round. So we want to be more like a botanic garden so that we have activities year-round for our surrounding community, which is both Bloomington and like Tulip Tree and Campus View and the surrounding campus. I also want to include the arts community with SOFA so that we can have a mentoring program for outdoor art installation, maybe work with Bloomington Area Arts Council so that we can have those come in and start working, pairing with SOFA to do art installations. A lot of things that would move the garden forward, both sustainability-wise, the preservation of the Shaluka space, that's how I refer to it as the Shaluka space, which will be the working garden, and then transforming the rest of it to an outward-facing garden. We've been a lot more internal, facing towards ourselves, locked gates, barbed wire, you know, protect ourselves. I'm not like that. I like gardens to be accessible. If you pick a few daffodils, I don't freak out and pull out my hair. I just plant more of them. So my feeling is that over the years we'll be a much more touchy-feely garden and much more accessible to the community.
Well, you've already, I know, during the holiday season, made quite a splash that's visible from the bypass. Can you tell us about what you did last Christmas for the Hilltop display?
Assessing what we had at the garden, I was, once it started to slow down, I was able to wander around and look at all the piles of stuff that were against the fences and in the weeds. And I found these old rebar bean towers that had been used in the children's garden. And we took out all the pieces and had them rewelded, spray painted them green, took some green Christmas lights and wrapped them on there, and then put them out like Christmas trees along the front fence line so people could see them from the bypass. It's because Hilltop is so visible. It is literally just 200 feet from the bypass, so you could really see it. So we wanted to get that vision and then just make it very bright. I mean, bright green lights it looked like real trees that we had out there. It was so real, someone actually stole one.
Oh, my goodness. I suppose that was a compliment.
It was a compliment that it was such a great display, someone wanted to take it and make it part of their own. So as long as I get publicity for it, I don't mind.
Well, I suppose during the winter, you're always looking ahead to spring. And what exactly do you do in the winter? You mentioned a greenhouse, but is this gardening that you can do in the winter?
That's exactly it. People always say, oh, it must be so nice that you're done with gardening for the year. And actually, if you're planning so that it doesn't become overwhelming, you're gardening year-round. We'll be starting seeds literally at the end of January. Right now, we're washing all the pots to get ready for the seeds. We're organizing all of our catalogs to start ordering seeds. And we just, believe it or not, just finished organizing all of our seeds. So right at before Christmas started, we just finished all of those. So it takes a long time to get everything. The seasons end and then they start again.
And what will happen in the spring? Will there be a plant sale, or will there be plants that you've grown yourself that are available to the public on a regular basis?
Yes. Throughout the winter, our conscripted volunteers will be making hypertufa troughs to sell at the plant sale. We've been collecting throwaway plants from people. People have been bringing us things that are overgrown or they can't take care of anymore. We've been making cuttings of succulents to have for the succulent troughs that we have. We're propagating new varieties of coleus that I breed. We'll have heirloom tomatoes for sale. We'll have a large variety of hard-to-find or basically unavailable plants available at the garden, at the plant sale in the spring. So we're quite excited about what's coming up.
Well, I know when I visited recently, it was a joy to walk into the greenhouse and see so many wonderful things. Now, can people drop in at any time, or are there certain hours, or how accessible is the building during the winter to visitors?
We are there from 9 till 5, Monday through Saturday. And then on Sundays, believe it or not, we are open from 8 till 12.
Oh, my goodness. You work Sundays, too?
Yes, we're there 7 days a week so the people that work can still come up and see us at the garden and enjoy it.
Sounds like a pretty heavy-duty position. What program highlights do you want to tell us about for next summer and fall so that we can gear up to see what we can enroll for?
Well, the end of January, we have coming up the seed starting and seed catalog class that we're teaching, and we have a seed swap coming up that same day. So we'd like people to do that. We also have the heirloom tomatoes, the coleus class. So we have and the hypertufa class again, and then we have a trellis making class. So all of our classes are found online at the Hilltop website, or they can simply call us at Hilltop or access us online at our Hilltop website.
Maybe you should tell us what the website is so we don't have
problems. We're part of IU's website. So if you go to IU and access Hilltop, you'll be able to find us there through that.
Good.
So
well, this might be a time for us to pause and listen to some of our music. Greg, can you tell us what you chose for our first music selection?
I chose some harpsichord music from Froberger, and I like it because most of the music I choose is very percussion-y, and I like harpsichord music for that reason.
I'm Moya Andrews, and I'm speaking today with Greg Spikert, the director of Hilltop Garden and Nature Center. And Greg, I was glad to see that it was our own professor of music, Elizabeth Wright, who was performing in the suite you chose by Froberger.
Thank you. Thank you.
You yourself have impressive qualifications and experience. Tell us a little bit about the beginning of your education and your career. And tell us where you were born and raised and where you started from.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I'm actually a native-born Texan. I was born in El Paso, Texas. And then we moved to Rome, New York. My dad designed computers for the government. So we moved around a bit until we moved to Minnesota. And my formative years were in Minnesota in the cold Zone 3. Mm. So I learned to garden in a Zone 3. So I've learned how to garden in a very harsh climate.
And then where'd you go to school?
I hate to say this, but I'm a Purdue grad. So.
A Purdue grad? Oh, my goodness. I wouldn't have asked that question if I'd known in advance.
Yep. So apparently you guys still need some help. So I thought I'd come down and help you guys out. So.
Now, what did you major in at Purdue?
I majored in horticulture.
Well, so. See, that gives you a perfect excuse because we don't offer that here.
That's correct.
You would have come here otherwise, I'm sure.
I'm sure.
Now, were you always interested in growing things?
I was. I've always been interested in growing things since I started in orchids when I was 6 with my grandfather. I started raising cymbidium orchids when I was 6.
And was your grandfather a mentor to you in this regard or were other family members?
My grandfather was a mentor. My mom was an active gardener. We raised a lot of food. We had a victory garden at home, almost a half acre. So gardening was a big deal. And then just other people. I was very involved. I was a rather precocious child, so my mom would farm me out to other families and, you know, kind of get me to garden. So that was – I really enjoyed gardening and a lot of people along the way. I think professionally when it comes – when I got more involved, there were people like Roy Clem that was really important in my life, who was a fantastic gardener and a great mentor and a very patient man. And people like Jim Waddick, who was an avid plant collector, who was always there to answer questions, Tony Avent, just the the giants of gardening have been really wonderful people in my life.
Well, you have had the kind of background or horticultural pedigree, the people you know, the people you've studied and worked with, that is especially amazing, that I'm very impressed when you toss off these names. But tell us about your early career activities and where you picked up your professional on-the-job horticultural experience.
Even at Purdue, when I was going to school, I worked in different labs and different jobs. I like a challenge. I like to learn new things. And I like to problem solve. So those kinds of things all fit together for me. So a new job, a new activity isn't foreign. I feel most uncomfortable doing the same thing. I feel least uncomfortable doing something new. So that makes it good for me. So believe it or not, I started at Frank's Nursery and Crafts. I've been through gardening. I did lawn mowing. I did gardening installation on my own. I worked at a garden center in the suburbs of Chicago, a large garden center called Alsip Nursery. And that's where my passion for water gardening started, and that whole experience of something new and something different. And beyond that, then I went into business for myself, which is a huge, varied thing, if you know that. And when I couldn't learn anything on my own, I volunteered. So I volunteered when I wanted to learn about iris. I volunteered with the Iris Society. When I wanted to learn about peonies, I joined the Peony Society or the Orchid Society. And then ultimately, I volunteered at the Chicago Botanic Garden so that I would be able to learn even more. And I found volunteerism to be unbelievable at learning education, at hands-on, working with people and meeting people. That's how I met all my connections. And then I also found that, unlike other industries, garden people are extremely giving. So if you make
they're
that
nurturing.
They're very nurturing and they're very giving. So although people find some of these people, you know, like, you know, you almost look at them as rock stars of the gardening industry, they're very nice people. I finally got to meet Roger Swain this year. And we had known each other
from Horticulture Magazine.
From Horticulture Magazine and the Victory Garden. And we had known each other for years, but never actually met. And so we had lunch together, and it was unbelievable to finally meet and garden together and just be in his garden. And it was really fun.
So you saw his own personal garden?
I saw his own personal vegetable garden and his berry garden and the pond that he built and his mapling that he does and his orchard. It was really very fun.
Because we've had glimpses of those things on the Victory Garden in years past. Well, that was exciting, I'm sure. Now, you mentioned the water gardens, and of course that's what you're best known for in the horticultural world. We'd all heard about you before you even turned up in Bloomington. So what is it about water gardens? They seem to have gained in popularity here, but then I'm sure if you look back historically, there have always been water gardens of one kind or another.
Correct. Water gardens have evolved from waterways, which was a very, you know, part of the Islamic tradition through Morocco and everything. And they were basically the fountains, the calming things, the element that brought cooling to the garden. And then throughout, then you add the Monet period where we bring in water lilies and the actual cultivation of water plants in a ornamental setting. The English and the Germans really ran with that and developed the entire pond industry. The Japanese had it in a different function, having with the fish and the, you know, so then when those two joined, you know, later on in Europe, in post-war Europe, all of a sudden you had this huge jump. The thing that really allowed it to happen much more broad now is through rubber liners, the flexible liners. Before it was a concrete pond, it was much more involved.
Expensive, too.
Expensive. It was cracked. I mean, you had to send away for the plants. There was nothing up close. So, I mean, if you weren't, and people don't order plants through the mail and then get a little fetid root and know what to do with it. So it was now that you can buy them at Lowe's and you can get them everywhere that you want. And there are people that know what they're doing locally. It's grown a lot. The other thing that people have learned is that water gardening is gardening for the gardening impaired because you can't overwater.
Oh, that's right. And overwatering is often the very worst fault of gardening.
That's it. It's usually the largest hurdle people have to learn is watering, and that allows people to have success at gardening and then move forward.
Well, that's an interesting spin on why water gardens are so popular at the moment. I know that whenever we have the Bloomington Garden Club's Garden Walk, we usually have a water feature in just about every garden that is viewed. Now, aren't they a lot of work, though?
They can be. A pond that's set up improperly or with poor expectation, we've found that people say, oh, well, you know, if you just put it together, it takes care of itself. Does your fish tank do that? This is just a really big fish tank, and that's how you have to look at it. As soon as you add fish, you're going to have issues. Issues of cleanliness, issues of water quality. It's just like a fish tank crossed with a swimming pool. So it can be quite a mess. So if you understand that there's going to be maintenance, if you understand that you're going to need serious filtration and you're going to have to clean it, then it isn't really an issue. It isn't really a problem. But if you just plunk something in and fill it full of water, fill it full of fish and plants, and then expect it to take care of itself, that's not going to happen. Because nature's way of dealing with a pond like that is to fill it in through silt and leaves until it becomes a meadow. Mm. And that's exactly how nature taking care of your pond will function.
So you soon won't have one.
You soon won't have a pond.
Now, as well as water plants and water gardening, there are a lot of other plants I know that have taken your eye and interest, either sequentially across your career or concurrently across your career. And I know coleus is one of your big favorites.
Coleus is a big favorite of mine. Even as a child, I traded coleus with people. I would go to plant garden club meetings and have coleus and grew coleus from seed, and people would send me cuttings in the mail. I do really love coleus. At one time, I had over 100 in my collection. I actually have over 100 now, so I guess I'm back to where I was. But I had winnowed it down to just 8 for a while. But my friends jibed me for many years that I was still growing grandma plants, you know, that no one bothers with coleus. It's just so overused and not useful. And now those very same people are telling me that, oh, I've added another one. I have 25 varieties we sell in our catalog. And I'm just like, you're behind.
Well, it was interesting, wasn't it, how it fell out of favor. And now the resurgence of interest is incredible. Does this happen a lot with plants?
Plants fall in and out of favor. And I teach this to my industry that new is a very relative term in gardening, and everything that's new or old is new again. So we had grown cleome, which all of a sudden is now a big plant again in the industry. Cannas, you know, I remember telling the Oregon Nurserymen's Association, you can now grow cannas. Martha Stewart says they're cool. So we can now grow cannas again, because for years we couldn't. And I think the big surge right now is effortless color. And colorful foliage, variegation, coleus, plants with margined foliage is really effortless color. It adds to the plant. A lot of now with people doing containers, they can have multiple ways of having color in a plant. In a container by having fewer plants. So you can have a plant that's variegated and have that at the same time.
So the colorful foliage is the reason why coleus are coming back into
correct.
Favor.
I mean, it's if you look at coleus, you can get many of the same colors that you're trying to get in flower color in foliage. And yet they never fall out of color because it's just the leaves.
Yes, whereas perennials only bloom for short periods, the foliage is in the garden. Yeah. Throughout all the growing seasons.
Correct.
Well, it's certainly fun to come to Hilltop and see all the coleus that you have in the
greenhouse.
Right. Now, is your wife a gardener, or does she just do all the support things for you?
My wife thought she was a gardener like me until I took her to a gardening convention. And she almost ran from it screaming by the third day of listening to people talk about Siberian iris ad nauseum for the third time. I, on the other hand, was still fascinated and could have taken another couple of days. But that, I think, is the true test of mettle for, whether you're a garden nut or you're just interested in gardening. My wife is interested in gardening. She likes to plant containers. And, you know, so I look at her as probably more a normal gardener than one that's as passionate as I am.
Well, probably that's good in terms of the balance of your marriage.
Correct.
Now, are there other members of your immediate family who are with you in Bloomington?
Yes, we have Stanley and Timex and Scrappy moved here with us, our three dogs. We have two silky terriers and a snoodle, a poodle times a schnauzer. So we have a from that. And that was my mom's dog. So we now have her little Scrappy dog.
I know when I visited Hilltop, it felt so friendly and like a family lived there when the dogs came rushing across the garden. And I think it must have lots of benefits to have these little fellows running around.
It has been. Actually, at first we were kind of worried about bringing them onto the scene, but it has been actually a blessing in disguise. A lot of the children from the surrounding apartments and dwellings don't have the capacity to have pets. And a lot of our volunteers that are older that now have to travel or are looking at their future of end up being in a home or maybe having to move to a retirement community are looking at not wanting to have a pet but still miss having a pet. So our volunteers really enjoy coming to see them. So we're like their grand pets so they can come and visit their pseudo pets. And then we now have families that come to the garden just so they can visit the dogs and interact with them and kind of have like what you call rent a pet. So it's kind of fun.
So it's a full service operation with emphasis on the nature as well as on the garden.
Correct.
I hear a lot of horticultural material made the trip from Chicago with you. What was your moving day like?
Oh, scary. I spent 2 weeks before moving about eight pickup truckloads, heaping full of plant material to Hilltop. We've dug over 3,000 plants, 3,000 bulbs, and about 100 trees and shrubs to bring to Hilltop.
My goodness.
And then the actual moving day itself that didn't involve plant material was my wife's responsibility. So she brought the bulk of our house with us. So we had three more trucks of house to move that day. And I was here in Bloomington, and she was there. It was very fortunate. We had a lot of really nice neighbors to help us, you know, and be there to help her get through that. It was a hectic time in our lives.
Well, most people don't move quite that much plant material when they travel. Now, what were you doing immediately before you left Chicago? What was your job at that point?
My job before I left Chicago was maintaining the medians in Chicago, that little strip of garden in the middle of Michigan Avenue on Wacker Drive, on Ashland, on the rooftop at the mayor's, you know, at City Hall, Upper LaSalle. All those little areas are what we weren't part of the Parks Department. I worked for a company that was hired by the city to manage that.
Well, that must have been an interesting experience.
It was interesting. It was plant growing on a 911 scale because everything was an emergency with the city. So that was a little stressful to arrive at your job at, you know, 5:30 in the morning and have already phone calls that we need to mow grass somewhere urgently or, you know, there's a bottle or somebody threw a McDonald's cup onto the median in Michigan Avenue. So rush down there and get it. So it was a little intense for me.
What kind of plants thrive when they're surrounded by concrete?
It's amazing what we grew. The plantings in Chicago were varied. My favorite street was Western Avenue, believe it or not, just down the street from where our office was. And it was done as native plants of Indiana. So it was done as a native woodland and prairie. Mm. So at one end of the street, it was a prairie that slowly transitioned into a woodland. And then it was a woodland, and then it transitioned into a prairie at the other end. So we had five blocks of native plants. So shooting stars would come up, and we had all kinds of ephemerals would come up, like Dutchman's breeches and trout lilies, and we had service berries and prairie grasses. It was very fun.
Well, it sounds lovely. What did you learn as a result of these kinds of experiences about yourself?
People have asked me that. What have you learned about yourself? I've learned that I love to problem solve. That's what I learned. I love something new. I love a challenge. And I've learned people say, well, you know, you're always busy, so you must not really know what you want to do. Actually, because I'm always busy, I know exactly what I want to do. What I want to do is make sure that everyone that wants to learns how to garden. That's what I want to do.
Sounds like a wonderful thing, because gardening seems to make you very happy and fulfilled. But what do you do for relaxation? Surely you don't garden.
Yeah, I garden.
You garden for relaxation.
I garden for relaxation. I go to garden centers. I read gardening catalogs. But I also, I do have other interests. I watch television. I like cartoons. I like escapist kind of stuff. I like sci-fi. I like crafts. I love to do crafts. If you've been to the garden, you'll see that there's wreaths on the door. There's little people made out of grass. There's, you know, concrete containers. And I like monster trucks.
Well, you've got many roles at Hilltop. Would it be fair to say, though, that at the core, at your very core, you're actually a teacher?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I used to not think so, but my friends have brought that to my attention. And maybe more than that, I'm a mentor, more than a teacher. I like people to grow in what they do.
Just like you like plants to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're interested in everything that grows and nurturing, learning and understanding about self and environment. Nature and nurture.
Nature and nurture. All rolled into one.
Well, Hilltop seems very much in sync with the university's emphasis on sustainability recently. How have you been involved in this university mission?
This was interesting because I started in the middle of this whole sustainability thing, and there was so much to do at Hilltop that until recent weeks I hadn't even known about it. And now Hilltop has actually fallen onto their radar, and they've wanted to include me. So I've had a couple of meetings with the task force to see what Hilltop had envisioned or what I have envisioned for Hilltop. And we had thought about composting studies for different types of table flatware that's compostable, talking about water recirculation and purification for the Jordan and the Jordan reestablishment, about green space, possibly a small LEED certified building to be used as a research tool for the university because, you know, we only need a small building. And then they could use those components to research and see how it functions and then apply those to new buildings being thought about on the university campus.
So it's a laboratory almost.
I see Hilltop as a whole as a laboratory. That's how I see it. And that's how I see it interacting with other parts of the university to work with anthropology through our garden that we're doing tropical gardens this coming up this summer and try to pull in anthropology to have some of them do some stuff, to pull in SOFA and have them do art in the garden and maybe possibly do some, you know, ethnic art that would fit those kinds of things. Maybe teach the children how to do art classes during the summer, work with geology and having fossils brought up, you know, for the kids to work on when we do prehistoric gardening. To work with education through our thing because we are educating people. So have education work with us, TV and radio, to record what we're doing and then work on developing podcasts for the education forms that we have so that teachers across the country can then download that education component for their classes.
So that sounds very exciting.
I see us being able to do so much there.
And service learning, which is a very popular vehicle today, fits, of course, with the Hilltop model very well.
Correct. Being able to actually apply it and do it and work through it, kind of like a under care, basically what you would say like a tutoring ability that we can help them so that they're not actually already in a teaching setting. They can actually do it with a teacher.
Yes, it's applied learning, hands-on
mm-hmm.
application
right.
of theoretical principles. Now, do you find students are excited by these kinds of opportunities?
They can be. Sometimes they're not, but a lot of times they are, which is nice when they are.
Now, horticulture involves techniques related to healthy food and lifestyle, as well as aesthetics and design principles. Does your vision for Hilltop focus on all of these different aspects?
Yes, it does. All of the different aspects, because the Shaluka space will be a working farm, so all the ugly components, what people consider ugly components, the compost bins and the worm farm and the stuff that changes and the coal frames for the kids and the bean poles and all that will be there. But then there's the more traditional, what you would call ornamental growing, where we have Tomato City, where we create a cityscape out of wire and basically tomato cages that replicates a cityscape. We have tropical education where we have tropical foods, where we basically build a tropical garden, but it's actually educational. It's all about growing tropical foods. We have the Great Pumpkin Patch, Charlie Brown. So we have all different kinds of pumpkins and gourds and squash, but it's very ornamental. So, yeah, I see it all.
The ornamental, the practical, and people learn about design and aesthetics.
Right.
Bloomington has a number of garden clubs and other groups that used to meet at Hilltop. Do you continue to hope that clubs of this kind will want to make use of your facilities?
Yeah, I envision those clubs hopefully coming back to the fold and wanting to use us again and seeing a place at Hilltop. We've tried to make inroads with the Daylily Societies and the Hosta Societies and try to get them, woo them back to us, because Hilltop has so much potential as a garden center for people to meet and to have their own ideas there so that people can enjoy those.
But isn't it true that some people just have black thumbs instead of green thumbs? Or do you think anyone can learn how to nurture plants?
Yeah, I think people need to find their garden niche to where they get involved and they can match it to their interests. I've met people that couldn't keep a houseplant alive to save their life, and yet they grow beautiful orchids. Or people that have fantastic cactus collections but really have no interest in anything else. Or people that are great, fantastic, wonderful vegetable gardeners, but there isn't an African violet in their house. So I think you need to find your niche. And gardening is so huge that you just need to keep cycling through things. And remember, sometimes plants just die. They commit suicide. They don't want to live with you. And you have to match those plants to your own.
And you have to learn how to site plants.
Correct.
It's no good trying to grow a tropical banana tree when we have winters that
right.
go below zero. Correct. Yours, I'm sure, will come into the greenhouse over the winter. Is that
correct.
Right?
Correct.
Now, why do we care about the environment? Some people say probably all this global warming and everything that's going on may be beyond everyone's control anyway. So maybe it doesn't matter what individuals do in the long run.
I learned what my grandmother taught me and what my neighbors. I grew up on a Polish neighborhood on a Polish street, and every Saturday they came out with their wash buckets and their babushkas, and they washed the street. We washed the sidewalks, cleaned everything up, swept up all the garbage, washed out our curbs, and that's how we took care of our little neighborhood. And the philosophy I learned was you don't have to think globally. If you take care of your little piece and everybody takes care of their little piece, it'll all work together.
Well, that sounds like a good rationale. Now, how would you like your work to be remembered?
I want people to remember me for being genuine, passionate, and helpful.
Sounds like a winning combination to me. And that brings us to the conclusion of today's interview with Greg Spikett, the director of Hilltop Garden and Nature Center. Thank you, Greg, for spending time with us today and for sharing your thoughts and your wonderful insights about gardening with our WFIU audience.
Thanks, Moya.
I believe you've got another piece of music for us. What did you choose this time?
I brought some guitar music by Fernando Sor, performed by Andres Segovia, to keep with my strumming percussion kind of theme.
I'm Moya Andrews, and thanks for listening. Thank you.
The program you just heard was recorded in December of 2007. The studio engineer and technical producer was Michael Paskash. Copies of this or other programs can be obtained by calling 812-855-1357. More information about Profiles, including archives of past shows, can be found on our website at wfiu.org. Profiles is a production of WFIU and comes from the studios at Indiana University. Christina Kuzmich, executive producer. Please join us again for the next edition of Profiles. For WFIU, thanks for listening.